campaigning during COVID is a whole lot different for local candidates, but there may also be some upsides.
It's actually made for a significantly more inclusive campaign season, which is something that we didn't really anticipate.
That's ISU Professor Carrie Melita. I'm Ryan Denham, and this is WGLT's The Leadoff.
Support for WGLT's The Leadoff comes from listeners like you. Join the community of news consumers who listen to this podcast and are willing to support it financially. Contribute at WGLT.org.
It's Wednesday, August 19th. Coming up, what you need to know to start your day. It's The Leadoff from WGLT, Bloomington Normal's public media. Now let's lead off with prosecutors winning a second murder conviction stemming from a 2018 shooting on Bloomington's West Side. The jury deliberated for less than a day before returning guilty verdicts yesterday against Taiwan Bruce. Prosecutors say he was one of three men who plotted a botched drug robbery that killed 20-year-old Egerton Dover. A second defendant, Anthony Gramsis, was convicted of murder last month. The third man, Curtis Hairston Jr., won't ever stand trial. He was killed himself in an unrelated shooting last year. Prosecutor Mary Lawson says that Hairston's absence did not make it any harder to prove their case against Bruce.
For both us as well as the family, it would have been nice to be able to hold him accountable for his actions as well. But whether or not he was alive or deceased, it didn't change the evidence. I think the evidence was clear as to what occurred.
Bruce and Gramsis were charged with felony murder under a provision of state law that allows a person to be charged if they play a part in a death that occurs during a forcible felony. The state claims that Bruce and others at a gathering in Normal became upset because Dover did not share his drugs with them. Bruce's defense attorney, Mark Messon, likened the state's case to a 500-piece puzzle with 495 missing pieces. Prosecutor Tamara Wagner disagreed.
For us, it was clear, but that's because we had the benefit of the Bloomington Police Department, who did a phenomenal job of digging through the evidence and finding and locating the witnesses and pulling the surveillance videos that became important.
Bruce will be sentenced October 8th. Dover's death in December of 2018 marked the end of the deadliest year in the Twin Cities for gun violence. 9 of the 11 homicides that year involved guns. Those deaths shared more in common than just the use of guns. All the victims and those charged with killing them were in their teens or 20s at the time their disputes turned deadly. Here's some other stories we're following the WGLT newsroom. 3 new cases of the coronavirus were reported yesterday in McLean County as the number of hospitalizations fell from 6 to 4. The testing positivity rate dipped slightly to 2%. Renters will have more time to apply for assistance through the state of Illinois. The application deadline was set for this Friday, but now renters have until August 28th at noon. That extension is due to last week's storms. And Illinois public health officials have launched a COVID-19 hotspot map for travelers to check before leaving the state. That map shows the states that have an average daily case rate of at least 15 cases per 100,000 people. Find more on these stories at WGLT.org. Political campaigning is a social endeavor, but like the rest of us, candidates have shifted to virtual platforms to connect with voters and get their message heard. Dana Vollmer talked to Illinois State University political scientist Carrie Melita about how holding rallies and town hall meetings has been working for those seeking election this November.
You might be surprised. Turnout at these virtual events has actually been not quite on par with an in-person rally, but it's not nothing. There have actually been sizable turnout. And what's actually been neat is there's been a particular rise in turnout among what we would call marginalized voters, people that maybe are physically disabled, are battling an illness, or are hospitalized, and that would never be able to participate in political rallies are now being included. People that, you know, don't have transportation to these events or can't take time off of work. It's actually made for a significantly more inclusive campaign season, which is something that we didn't really anticipate.
National office campaigns generally have a lot of resources at their disposal and may be able to substitute some of this, shoe leather that's not being done, at least not in person. But for races that are happening at a state or even county level, those door-to-door and community events tend to be a little bit more important in the turnout. So for those down-ballot races, what will this year look like for them, and how can they kind of make up some of that difference?
There is still an element of door-to-door that can be done, You know, wearing masks and being distant. I've seen a number of local campaigns that they train their campaign workers to ring the doorbell and then step back. They're saying 8 to 12 feet and have a conversation that way. So you can still do door-to-door, maintaining social distance. And, you know, of course, campaigns are relying a little bit more on literature, you know, that they leave on the doorstep than they have in years past. So it's changed the dynamic a bit, but it hasn't fundamentally altered the way you can go door to door. It's just kind of changed the procedures and how you train your campaign workers. They just have to be a little more considerate and mindful of the procedures.
When I think of like a 19th century race, we kind of think about newspaper endorsements and word of mouth being really prominent ways that candidates kind of get on the minds of voters. Are those things going to kind of come back to popularity this year?
Yeah, I mean, you know, things like endorsements, you know, it never really went away. It was just, I think, the amount of attention that we paid to it went away. And in times like this, where there's more of an information deficit, because campaigns are trying to adapt into this new reality, which is probably going to be this way for at least a couple of years, if not indefinitely, you know, it's maybe, you know, we have fewer shortcuts now to pay attention to. So maybe we start going back to endorsements as a way to help us figure out, you know, where candidates stand on the issues. But, you know, candidates still fill out questionnaires saying what their stances are on the key issues of the day. There's still going to be debates. They'll probably be virtual, or I don't know, the podiums will be moved further apart without an audience. So I don't think that people will be struck with a lack of information on you know, how they're, who they're going to vote for and how they're going to figure that out. But certainly some of these things that didn't matter, you know, as much might matter more moving to the future, like not just newspaper endorsements, but interest group endorsements as well.
To hear more of Dana Vollmer's conversation with Carrie Melita, go to WGLT.org. Before we let you go, the McLean County Board of Health will have a special meeting tonight at 5:30. They'll consider a contact tracing partnership with ISU. That is it for today. Thanks for listening to The Leadoff. Support for this podcast comes from listeners like you. Contribute at WGLT.org.